are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Has a really nice avatar right now, actually, with Mike Matheny saying, I wish I could manage, or something like that. What does it say?
Oh, Mike Matheny wrote a book.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
The direct reason for that is because I've been...
You've been suspended for PEDs.
Yes, right? Yes. Very much like Starling Marte, who we will talk about for a little bit tonight.
Yeah.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
If you play guest pitch, it's an automatic home run, and it's kind of annoying.
Well, when you throw changeups outside and away to every single hitter with Carlos Martinez, then I usually pick up on that.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome in to episode 259 of the Friends with Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Werner, and with me is Matt Thompson. Matt, how's it going, buddy?
Good, man. Just been busy with work. Just enjoying a little bit of this. Took advantage of the train ride to work, and I was watching a lot of the minor league clips and stuff. It's been an interesting year with the minor leaguers. A lot of stat lines to look into. Not too much, obviously, with only being... season being less than 2 weeks old, but it's always fun to see your favorite prospect producing or not. I mean, Yoan Moncada has been impressive as hell. I think even more impressive than I thought he would be in right out of the gate in AAA, so that's been good to see. So, yeah.
Likewise, my friend. I'm very, very busy with work. I just got promoted a few weeks ago, and...
Congratulations.
They're kicking my ass, so I... if you guys haven't noticed, I haven't been on the Monday show the last few weeks, so that's... The direct reason for that is because you've been suspended for PEDs. Yes, right? Yes. Very much like Starling Marte, who we will talk about for a little bit tonight.
Yeah.
But Andy is not with us this evening. He has some family obligations going on, so it's just going to be you and I, Matt, like the good old days.
Yeah, just like the old days. Let's get it done.
Yeah, let's get it done. Just like I got you done, if that makes any sense, over the weekend when we played MLB The Show. I just whooped that ass, and I feel no remorse.
Yeah, let me get some more games under my belt, and I'll take you on.
Yeah, it's fun. Eli and I, we played a bunch of times, and at the beginning, it was really close between him and I, and he actually beat me a few times. And then all of a sudden, everything changed, and I had like a 10 or 15 game winning streak against him, and it really wasn't close. So maybe you'll end up kind of figuring me out over time, and then I'm out.
I need to find a pitcher with 5 pitches, like, if you so it decreases your chance of guessing right.
That's true. If you play guess pitch, right, I'm a problem.
If you play guess pitch, it's an automatic home run, and it's kind of annoying.
Well, when you throw changeups outside and away to every single hitter with Carlos Martinez, then I usually pick up on that.
Yeah.
Anyways, you can reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner FWFB. You can reach Matt on Twitter at MDTomp. FWFB has a really nice avatar right now, actually, with Mike Matheny saying, I wish I could manage, or something like that. What does it say?
Oh, Mike Matheny wrote a book. Yeah.
Which is awesome. I mean, it's not awesome, but it's pretty awesome.
He wrote a book on managing. I don't really know what the title is, and I really don't care what the title is. But I've seen this going around a lot online, and so I had to caption it. It's titled Somehow I Manage, and it's got the great one himself, Mr. Mike Matheny, on the cover. So check that out. It's worth the look. I think it's hilarious.
He's not wrong. Somehow he manages.
And I had to crop it because I couldn't fit it. And there's some stuff on the bottom that got left out. I'll try to find the real image and post it. It's even better.
I won't read it just because absolutely not. But I think it's a brilliant, brilliant topic to talk about.
I don't think you could pay me enough to read his book on managing. First of all, the fact that he wrote a book on, well, a couple reasons why he wrote the book, but for him to think he was like advanced enough to write a book on managing and then watching him, like, I'm no expert, trust me, I'll be the first to admit it, but like, I'm not the only one that bags on him. So, and then, he wrote it because he was bankrupt and needed money, but that was obvious, but that's a story for a different day. He's as good as investing in real estate as he is managing. I'll leave it at that.
Well, it's definitely the right title, and I'm okay with that, but it's an even better topic for a podcast. We need to, like, make that an actual show, just talk about we need to read like 15 pages from the book and then like give what 20, 30 minutes on it just as a topic for a show. I'm completely in for that because I bet it's going to be really fun to do.
With him on the cover, I'm assuming it's a coloring book, so it might be pretty short.
It might be. As usual, please rate and review the show. iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, any of the podcast aggregators. It really helps us out. We are still giving away prizes at the end of each month. I think I am due to pick a person, so I'll probably just draw some really good reviews out of a hat, and you will end up with some FWFB swag. But please keep those rolling in. Again, it really, really helps us out. It's something that we really, really love, and it also gives us an opportunity to move up the ranks. So please continue to do that for us. And let's dive in. So before we do dive in, actually, I do want to mention, since the minor league stats haven't really accumulated much and there's not a lot of big differences in the way we look at, you know, prospects now than we did a couple weeks ago, we're going to kind of turn our focus to a few guys, you know, in different aspects. Right now, tonight, we're going to do AL hitters, and it's going to mainly focus on guys that have not accrued over 500 plus at bats in the major leagues, and we're going to do that next week with AL pitchers as well, guys that have not accrued over 100 or 150 innings pitched yet but are still kind of rookie slash second year eligible in fantasy keeper and dynasty leagues. That some are really well known names and they're off to a really hot start, some aren't, but we want to give kind of some feedback on stuff like that. We're also going to do that with the NL the 2 weeks after, and we're also going to throw in some news items like we'll talk about first tonight, just to kind of keep everybody current on things. But overall, for the next month, we're going to be sticking to keeper dynasty leagues, and we're going to be probably sticking to the majority of the players we're talking about being major league players already or very, very close to it.
Yeah, I think it's, as a prospect podcast, it's a really tough time, really tough part of year to find much to talk about in the prospect realm, just because, like you said, there's nothing meaningful from these stats. They're interesting, but you can't really draw any conclusions from them. I mean, the number one thing we have is injuries, and those are always depressing to talk about. So we kind of have to balance it out with some goodness here. So
obviously, if something pops up, if somebody is looking awesome in the minors, whether it be with their pitch mix or the mechanics or the hitting side is looking really good and it's not just the stats, then surely we'll bring it up. This isn't a situation over the next month where we're just going to be completely omitting minor league coverage. We are just trying to keep it more focused towards guys that are in the majors that we can watch nightly in a very HD friendly screen, as opposed to, I don't know if you guys watch MILB's minor league
very hit or miss.
I watched a Harrison Bader home run and it was like just his ass. It wasn't even like him swinging the bat itself, which was unfortunate. And so it's kind of,
to be fair, their home feed for the Memphis is actually pretty good.
But yeah, it's not bad. And Durham's isn't the worst either. The triple.
No, that was pretty good. I watched Moncada on the Durham feed the other day, and it was pretty good.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. So, again, like you pretty much said it perfectly, it's hit or miss there. But at least with some of the guys we'll be talking about the next month, it's guys that are likely owned in deeper keeper dynasty leagues or are on your radar for right now. And it can give you just a little better idea of where we value them for the next 3 to 5 years, which is usually where keeper dynasty leagues kind of lie. But let's start off with some news and notes to begin with. And first and foremost, we have Starling Marte getting an 80-game suspension out of nowhere, which is obscene. I woke up. I think I saw Justin tweet about this. He's like, I woke up, I saw Starling Marte got suspended, I went, turned over, and went back to sleep. It's kind of the way I felt about it, because
yeah,
we can't even be surprised by this anymore, right? And even though everybody just assumes that due to taking steroids, you're ending up hitting for a majority of, you know, a big amount of pop, somebody like Starling Marte, somebody like D. Gordon, back in the day, it was what, that Everett Cabrera? The little speedster from the Padres. He was also a guy that got, you know, a massive suspension due to steroids as well. But with Starling Marte, this is going to be an 80-game thing. In keeper dynasty, there's not a lot to take away from this other than some of the secondary options that we'll talk about, I'm sure. But with Marte, it's really unfortunate for you, for people that are playing in leagues this year that have assembled a really good team and have Marte ready to contribute to that, and he's out for 80 games. What's your take on this right now?
I think it's especially painful because, I mean, a lot of you can't put him, you can't DL him because he's not DL. He's not DL eligible.
He's taking and, over a roster spot that you
can use. Yeah, and if so if your guys' teams are a lot like mine, you have about four or five DL guys anyways. You don't even have enough spots for all those guys. I know Justin tweeted something, and he's not exaggerating. In our Friends with Fantasy Benefits League, he has seven guys on the DL or suspended. So, and when you're in a 20-team league like that with, 40-man rosters, depth is very, very thin. So I don't know what he's going to do as far as that goes. But I'm sure a lot of you guys are in similar situations, probably not as strong as that. But, I mean, I think you have to drop him in any league, in all 10-team leagues. And I think even depending on the format for the 12 teams, three outfielders or five outfielders might be cutting them too, no?
In redraft, I'm not opposed to dropping him, and I'm kind of keeper. You're not dropping him.
Keeper, you're not dropping him. Yeah, keeper, you're not dropping. So
I want to keep it away from redraft a little bit because I'm sure the main show or one of our shows throughout the week that focuses on redraft is going to bring this topic up. But yes, if you're asking me, since I probably won't be on any of those and whatever, I think that he's definitely droppable for this season, even though it's unfortunate. I mean, if you're in a completely deep league where it's like 20 teams and the next guy you'd be picking up is just completely terrible, then yeah, I'm okay with holding on to Marte. But it's really, really a detriment to your team to just hold an open roster spot that you could be using for somebody that's not going to be giving you any value. Just some background on Marte. You know, I pulled up some stats. Since 2013, Marte is second in stolen bases with 150 amongst all outfielders, 20th in WRC plus at 122, 9th in batting average at 291, and 14th in runs scored, $29 plus earner in roto leagues in four straight seasons coming into 2017. It's just a mammoth blow, an absolute mammoth blow. If you're talking replacements for this year, right now they've been playing John Jaso and Adam Frazier in right field with Andrew McCutchen moving over to center. They also brought up Jose Ozuna, who had a really good spring. He hit 407, 492, 759 this spring with a 10-10 strikeout to walk ratio, five home runs, 17 RBI, four of those with doubles, one stolen base in 54 spring training at bats. Right now I would say that Ozuna is not viable for National League only leagues or keeper dynasty, but just keep it in the back of your minds because Austin Meadows, who we have talked about at length many times on the show dating back to last year, he's hitting 146, 217, 244 right now in 49 AAA appearances. Last year in AAA and 46 plate appearances, he hit 219, 297, 460. So right now, as much as we love Meadows, he's just not ready. I know Neil Huntington also claimed that he's just not mature and polished enough to be ready for the major leagues yet, but we will see him in the second half of the season. I have no doubt about that.
Yeah, here's an interesting stat. I kind of gave the Pirates a little bit of crap by not calling up Meadows, but I mean, he's struggling right now in AAA. But here's another interesting thing. Pirates outfielders at bats in AA and AAA before getting called up. Marte had just over 900. McCutchen was over 1,300. And Polanco was over 500. Meadows only has 350.
In AAA or the minors?
And AA. AAA and AA. Okay, upper levels of minor leagues.
I was going to say 900, 1,300. That's insane for AAA.
Yeah. Marte and McCutchen had 900, 1,300 respectively in the upper minors. Polanco had just over 500. Meadows, like I said, is at 355. So they would be pushing him in more aggressively than all the other three they have so far. And to be honest with you, he's struggling in the minor leagues, which you can't – I mean – that doesn't predict major league success, and obviously Meadows is a better player than what he's showing right now, but you like him to at least start hitting a little bit before you bring him up to the more challenging level. So I'm okay with him keeping him down for now, but if you talk to me in two more months and he's still in the minor leagues, then that's a problem.
Yeah, I think that's a problem as well. But again, I think that we're both advocating to pick up Austin Meadows if you are in a keeper dynasty league that's a little bit shallower and you can use NA slot or some type of minor league slot. I'm sure that he's already owned in any type of keeper dynasty league that you're in. Based on the listeners we have, I'm sure that that's something that's going on. So, but if for some reason he's available, Austin Meadows needs to be owned. And I think he should have been owned a long time ago. So if he is available, definitely pick him up. Let's move on to Marcus Semien Marcus Semien, as much as I like him and I liked him coming into the season as a cheap, power source for a shortstop, he's going to be out for a couple months, it looks like. I think they said 6 weeks, but with something like this, I would expect it to be at least 2 months. On top of that, how is his power going to look when he comes back? So in general, in Keeper Dynasty, I'm looking at this as a lost year for him. Even if you get something when he returns, I'm not really looking at it as something that's going to boost my team. And with that, you have to also think about the future for him, because he's always been somebody that struggled to make contact. Last year, he did great in terms of the 27 home runs and the 10 stolen bases. So that's awesome. But moving on, I don't know what to really think about Semien here. Especially with Barreto, obviously Barreto is the other part of this conversation. Right now, he's hitting, 283, 340, 478 in AAA Nashville, which is the PCL. A couple home runs in there, one stolen base. 17-3 strikeout-to-walk ratio, though. And if you looked at the way he ended last year, it was really, really inflated based on the fact that he moved to the PCL. I've always said this about Barreto. I don't think he's a 30 stolen base guy either, which is something he's shown in the minor leagues a couple times. Either way, this isn't really a Barreto conversation, but it does kind of combine with the fact that we're not really secure in what Semien's role might be long-term with this team based on the fact that his defense is terrible. I do think he goes to second base long-term because they don't really have a option there between Jed Lowrie and Chad Pinder and Joey Wendell. Those are all kind of mediocre options, but at least for right this second, Adam Rosales is filling in for Marcus Semien. He's played every game or started every game since Semien has been down, and I would expect that to be what happens for the foreseeable future. But I do think Barreto, of all of the prospects we continue to talk about, at least the high-level ones, I think Barreto is probably the first one to get a shot.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with that. I think he comes up about a month and a half or so. But the thing with Barreto is he's put up that nice stat line in AAA as a 21-year-old.
Yeah.
So that's worth noting. He's always been every level he's been in, he's always been amongst the youngest players, if not the youngest player. So the stat lines he's put up in the past are encouraging. I agree with you. He's not a 30 stolen base guy. I think he can land somewhere in the 15 to 20 range.
Sure.
And I think that's still valuable. And I think he's also in the second base conversation. And Oakland has proven with Barreto, not to get it too off the subject here, like he was kind of like, oh, he's not good enough to play short defensively. Well, they have Marcus Semien there. And Semien is atrocious at shortstop. Might be the worst defensive shortstop in the league that starts every day.
Could be right.
And he's still there. And so they don't value that. So I think it's not a stretch to say Barreto might stay there. And that's going to affect Semien long term. Semien moving to second base and shortstop. I mean, to second base would kind of – shortstop's deep. So I don't know if it would hurt him as much, but he's a big power OBP guy. And, Semien, he's an interesting guy for sure. He shouldn't be playing shortstop now. So to project what he's doing in a year or two is easy to say he'll be moved off position, but they don't really have a guy around. Richie Martin is a good shortstop in their system. He's a defensive guy. The bat's a little light out of the University of Florida, a good college bat. But it hasn't really translated to the pro ball. He doesn't look anything exciting, kind of fits the utility profile. So this organization still doesn't really have a bona fide defensive shortstop. So I think Semien's okay there.
What do you think the chances are that they move him over as a, not a utility guy, but like a Ben Zobrist type guy who plays full time next year, but ends up getting sprinkled in everywhere. Maybe a little bit of third base, even though they have multiple options there, or a little bit of shortstop, second base. You could even see him getting a couple reps at first base if things play that way, because I mean, Oakland doesn't really have a great first baseman, unless you count Matt Olson. I don't think they really have a first baseman in their minor league crops either that's going to contribute in the coming years. So maybe I'm looking at this the wrong way. I don't think Semien from a fantasy landscape has any type of risk here other than the fact that his batting average is going to fluctuate year in and year out. But I think his power is legit enough to hit 15 to 20 plus bombs. He hit 27 last year, obviously. But I think he's more of a 15 to 20, 22 home run guy moving forward with 8 to 15 stolen bases any given season. But I think you're better bet here is to possibly try and buy here with the opportunity being that he's out for essentially the next couple months, and you might be able to get him cheap from somebody that is competing. Likely a better deal if you're not competing right now, but if you are competing, I still think that there is an avenue in which you can buy him low. In general, I think that moving forward, even though he is atrocious defensively, he probably could play at other spots and still get full-time at-bats.
Yeah, I want to clarify a comment. I said he's an OBP guy. He's not. He's an OBP compared to his batting average, but his batting averages are so low, it doesn't really. He walks a good. What I'm trying to say is he walks enough, but he doesn't hit for a high enough average to pump it up high enough. But the thing with Semien is, like you said, I think Oakland, if anybody's going to do that, it's going to be him. Yeah, and I think he's going to stick around in Oakland for at least the foreseeable future, next 2 or 3 years, because he's not even arbitration eligible yet, I don't think. So, you know, they're like
26.
Yeah, so they have their cheap, cost-controlled talent. So I think he's still there, unless they get a huge offer, which is going to be hard to do with a guy coming off wrist injury now. So, I mean, I think he'll be in Oakland the next 2 or 3 years, but hopefully the power sticks, because he's not the type of player that can afford to take the power hit that wrist injuries often bring. So hopefully he can get back up to the 25 home run guy, which we've only seen 1 year, by the way. He hit 15 home runs in Triple A in 2014, 2015, and first real full season in Oakland, in 155 games, he had 15 home runs. That's not really that impressive. 27 and 159, that's good growth. Didn't hit any this year, but obviously I think you can blame the injury on that. But if anybody's going to try what you said, I think they should. He's kind of a good fit for that. It would be Oakland. So,
would you take Starlin Castro or him long term?
Probably Castro. I think people forget how young Castro is.
I agree. I would take Castro over him. Try to think of some other guys off the
top. And I'm an out of Castro guy, if anyone remembers from me being up.
What about Dansby Swanson? Would you take Dansby or him? Or Semien, I'm sorry.
OBP format, I'm taking Dansby.
I'm taking Dansby long term. What about Chris Owings?
Probably still Owings.
I'm going Semien there. What about Peraza?
I'm going to go Semien there.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not a Jose Peraza guy.
I am. I even though I know he doesn't walk, and you hate that. I hate that too, to a degree. But I don't mind it with my stolen base guys. I'm going Peraza there. Ryan Schimpf, last one.
Semien, because Schimpf's upside was last year.
Oh no, Schimpf's been doing all right this year. So
I kept him in a dynasty league, but I didn't really expect to get much out of it. But I'm impressed. But
yeah, he's doing well.
I still got to go Semien there. But again, I mean, it's tough. The wrist injury and the bad ballpark anyways. And
I agree on Semien, but I do think that you're low-playing Schimpf a little bit, especially since he beat out Spangenberg, and we don't know if or when Spangenberg might come up. Either way, I think Semien still has some value. Don't panic quite yet. I think that he's fine. It's just going to take some time with a player coming off of wrist injury. Let's move on to our next two news things before we go into some players here from the AL side. First and foremost, we're going to talk about two closer situations, the first one being the more popular one, the Nationals closer situation, and that is the fact that Blake Treinen and his 6 walks over his last 4 innings pitched, along with 4 earned runs, 7 hits, and only 2 Ks in that span, has lost his closer role, at least for now. It's going to be a mix, is what Dusty Baker says, between Sean Kelly and Coda Glover. Sean Kelly has 4 straight clean appearances after starting the year with 3 clunkers. He gave up 3 home runs in his first 3 appearances to start the year. This is also coming off of 2016, where he had a 2.64 ERA, 0.9 whip, 13.5 K per 9, and a 3 walk per 9 as well. Coda Glover, he's been used in the highest leverage situations thus far for the Nationals, even higher than Sean Kelly, even though Kelly's a close second. But he has a solid swing strike rate and solid velocity, but it hasn't correlated to strikeouts quite yet. But I think it will in the long run.
Yeah.
At least for right now, though, I'm buying Kelly. From a Keeper Dynasty perspective, though, I don't mind going with Glover. I don't mind trying to get Glover as a stash or a throw-in in a deal. I do think that there's a legitimate chance he could be the long-term closer for the Nationals. Will that be this year, or will he get a ton of saves this year? I don't know. I would maybe say the over-under is at 8 or 9, something like that. But
yeah,
at least for the future, I think that Sean Kelly certainly has some things that are worrisome long-term. Blake Treinen has obviously not gotten the walks in control here. And then Coda Glover seems to have the highest upside. But I'm wondering with you, you know, which one of these two between Kelly and Glover would you like for Keeper Dynasty this year? Or are you just kind of treating it as a redraft and trying to take the guy that will probably get the most saves right now?
Yeah, I don't put too much stock in minor league relievers. I think trying to predict what major league relief pitching is going to do is a tough enough task as it is. So I tend to stay away from this. But I am intrigued by Glover. But if I am owning somebody, it's going to be Sean Kelly, because he has the job. And Sean Kelly has been great before this year. The only thing with him is injury. But, I mean, that's any pitcher nowadays, right? So, and Kelly with the slider, his tendency to give up maybe a little too many home runs. But we'll see how that plays out. But the thing with Coda Glover, since we're prospect-oriented here, I will focus on him a little more. 2+ pitches in the fastball and slider. I mean, that's good enough as a reliever there.
That's all you need. Yep.
But he also has an average curveball and an average changeup, too, that he can go to. Changeup's a little better. I'd say the changeup's above average with an average curveball. So that gives him 4 average offerings in my book. And I think as a reliever, I mean, that's crazy. That's ridiculous stuff. And he struck out over a guy per inning across 4 different minor league levels in 2016. Kind of, he rose up very, very quickly, and it was kind of surprising with the manager that they have that he was even in a discussion to be closer this early. You know what I mean?
Because, that's kind of telling, to be honest
with
you.
Dusty it is, Baker because
never even squints at minor leaguers or rookies, yeah.
Yeah, and I think for him to be in the conversation is nice. So I guess if you're in if you're definitely like see in our Fantasy Benefits Dynasty League, we have holds as well. So I mean, if you have saves and holds, I mean, I think I'd rather have Glover.
I agree.
Because you're still getting value now, just in addition to the strikeouts and low ratios. He does walk a little bit too many guys, but he's a young reliever. He's 24, so I think that's normally the last thing to settle in for a reliever is the command at the major league level. So hopefully, you know, there's no reason to expect he won't improve in that aspect, and he's not dreadful by any means. So it's getting better, but in a save and hold leagues, I want Glover.
I think that he's going to start to figure it out a little bit more as he goes.
Yeah, definitely. No reason why he wouldn't.
His first pitch strike rate has been abysmal this year. I mean, in 20 innings last year, he had almost a 67% first pitch strike rate. This year, it's been 43%. That's surely to regress to in a positive direction. And again, his velocity is sound. It's 96 plus, almost 97. Same exact as it was last year. I understand we have hot guns right now, but it's not alarming, the fact that he's down a tick if you looked at it that way. And once his first pitch strike rate gets back in check, I think that you could see a really nice regression in terms of the strikeout rate as well, because he has an 11% swinging strike rate, which means he has the ability to miss bats. Yes, he does have some problems with walks at times, but overall, I think that he's going to be the closer of the future. If you're looking at redraft only, I do think Kelly is the better guy to get.
Yeah, he's got the job. Yeah.
So if you're competing and you have Kota Glover, then I would try and get Kelly, because you likely will have the closer slash holds guy for the rest of the season for a winning club, for a club that could, you know, make a World Series run if things played right for him. So I think that both of them carry a ton of value depending on how deep of a league you play in. But for redraft, I think Kelly's the guy that's going to end up with more saves this season. Kota Glover, though, I think is a good arm that has the potential to be a top 10 closer in the future.
Do you want an off the radar? I mean, I don't like drafting, holding onto relievers in dynasty leagues, but an off the radar reliever I do like, if I can get my hands on that, I'm going to, is Carl Edwards in Chicago.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. I think he's the closer of the future there. I mean, Wade Davis is a free agent after this year. I have no idea what they're going to do with him. He's obviously an injury risk, and the way Madden is using CJ Edwards now, he's kind of the guy that comes in when there's a fire. Guys on base, he brings in Edwards, and I think he throws a lot of trust in him. And I think ultimately he's the closer of the future for the long term in Chicago. So he'd be the guy I would probably roster over Glover, to be honest.
Looking at that leverage index, which is great for looking at when coaches or managers are putting in their best relievers and such. Right now, at least for the Cubs, Koji Uehara is the one that leads there. So Madden is trusting Uehara the most, but it's by a very slim margin. Carl Edwards is a very, very close third. Right underneath that is Justin Grimm. Obviously, Grimm has no aspirations to be a closer, but I like the Carl Edwards call. I think that people found out about him last year in the postseason, and obviously prospect buffs knew about him long before that, but he made his talent apparent to everybody once he was in the playoffs last year.
Yep. Those failed starters, man. They got that repertoire, and
they do
turn into, like, I mean, Glover has been a reliever throughout all the minor leagues and throughout all college baseball, and all of his pro experience has been in the bullpen. And Edwards is one of those guys who started pretty much every year, except for before last year, I believe, or the middle of 2015, I believe, he got converted to a full-time reliever, and he's really exploded since. So he's been interesting to watch. Guys like that are always a little bit higher on my radar. I don't hold on to relievers, like I said, but they're always worth stashing in the back of your mind.
Absolutely agree. All right, and talking about relievers still, this will be the last news topic. Your boy, Trevin Rosenthal,
yeah,
it's a save today. And if we're looking at, again, the leverage index and what Mike Matheny is liking, which pitchers he likes using in the later roles here, Matt Bowman, Brett Cecil, and Sung Wan Oh have been the ones that he's been using in the later innings. But Trevor Rosenthal obviously possesses the upside to be in that mix as well. I think it's apparent that he's behind Oh if something were to happen, based on the fact that he got saved today. I know that you've been pretty steadfast in saying that it's Brett Cecil based on the money and based on the guaranteed contract.
Yeah, Cecil's been terrible too, so that doesn't help.
I think the thing with Rosenthal is he's just, one season removed from having 100 what do you have? Between 2014 and 2015, he had 45-plus saves in each season, and that also came with 170 Ks and 139 innings pitched between those 2 years. 3.2 ERA one season, 2.10 ERA another. I know that Rosenthal had the shoulder problem, and he had an injury-plagued 2016.
Looks healthy now.
He's healthy now, and he looked great, at least today. I went back and watched it. He looked great. And as far as Sungwon Oh is concerned,
oh boy,
he has given up a run in 4 of 6 appearances this year. He also, this is the more disturbing thing to me, 3 strikeouts in 6 innings pitched. He had 103 last year in 80 innings pitched.
Yeah.
That's the more alarming thing to me, is the fact that Sungwon Oh is not missing as many bats. His swing strike rate is 6% decreased from last year, and the strikeout numbers tell the same story.
See,
I think that my main point is I think Trevor Rosenthal is a must add. If for some crazy reason he's available in your league, he's a must add. I also think that if you're a Sungwon Oh owner, or if you're not, you need to try your hardest to get Rosenthal, because this is somebody that has established he can be a top 10 closer, even a top 5 closer at the highest level whenever he's not injured. And I think that he's not injured right now.
It sounds like you're stuck in my Twitter feed there, man. I think
I have not, I promise.
No, word for word, on Twitter yesterday, I was watching, Oh put himself in quite the jam. And Rosenthal had a scheduled off day, I guess, cause he threw the last couple days before that. But so he didn't pitch yesterday, being, Tuesday. But so it went straight from Matt Bowman to Oh. But Rosenthal is the eighth inning guy here, and I tweeted this yesterday. I said, if you have Oh, doesn't look right. He's not missing bats. A lot of foul balls is what he's getting. The stuff doesn't look as crisp. And I'm glad you have the numbers to back it up, because I think they tell the whole story there, and I think Rosenthal is the handcuff here. And Rosenthal, if everyone forgets, was Mike Matheny's guy before this. And the only reason why he lost that job was because he got hurt.
Yep.
He was pretty terrible during stretches in 2016 before he actually started missing time with the injury. I think it was pretty obvious he was already hurt during that time. And he was blew quite a few saves in his brief half season there in 2016 as the closer. And he was still getting the ball every day because he was still Matheny's guy. So I think that's worth knowing too. He's definitely the first man up. I stand corrected on this. Cecil hasn't pitched well. And I should have known with the manager there, Cecil's the new guy, so he doesn't know who he is. So he's not going to go there. He has a level of trust in Rosenthal. Whether he should or shouldn't is a different debate. But he still likes Rosenthal, and he's going to be the guy. And unfortunately, as a Cardinal fan, I hate saying this, is it sooner rather than later, because Oh does not look right at all.
I agree. So make sure that you get Trevor Rosenthal at any cost. Not any cost, but at any price that you can that's low.
If you squint and look at the numbers, he could provide Andrew Miller type value in redrafts now, because the strikeouts are that high. He's going to walk more guys, obviously, so the whip's not going to be as strong. And Rosenthal always kind of run into some weird BABIP luck, it seems, just by watching him. But the strikeouts are going to be there, and he's going to get the opportunities. And he was another key point is he was kind of being stretched out as a starter in spring training, and they kind of alluded to using him as a super reliever. So we'll see if that plays.
He could be. I think in the long run, he's going to end up getting the opportunity to save games.
I do too. Yeah, I agree. I'm just saying that's an alternative thing that happens, and he still has value in that way too. So I'm with you.
Agreed.
Got to like that negative 1.38 FIP though. Negative 1.38. That's nuts.
That is pretty nuts. Let's move on to the main topic here. So we're going to talk some AL hitters that, again, just don't have a a full season or close to, they either have a full season or less or close to a full season or less at bats in the major leagues. They're all young. They're all, you know, pretty high established prospects, but not necessarily in the top 10 of their organization or anything like that. But I thought we would lead it off with a bang here. And again, we're doing AL hitters, so it could be any position, but Mitch Haniger is who I want to lead off with. Guy that has a hit in 12 straight games, 13 of the last 14. That's also before today, so I don't know if
big
he got
game.
It today. But
three for four today with three runs and four RBIs.
Go figure. So that's 13 straight games, 14 of the last 15. He also is in the top 20 in barrels in on the StatCast, you know, barrel, whatever they call that, a barrel stat. Is that a stat or a result?
Yeah, I think
whatever.
So.
It's 98 degree.
I'll
98,
say it's a metric. It's a metric.
Yeah, metric. Better. That's a better way to put it. Sorry, we're both very tired.
yeah.
But the way a barrel works is it's either 98 miles per hour exit velocity or higher, and I believe the launch angle is between, I think it's like 26 and 34 degrees. I could be wrong there. But either way, it's essentially a 1500 slug or a 1500 OPS on average and a 625 plus batting average on those balls. So essentially you want a barrel. And right now Mitch Haniger is top 20 in that. That also isn't updated, so he could be even higher. The fact that he went 3-for-4 today is probably a good sign. If you just want to look at his actual raw stats, right now, again, before today's games, he's hitting 293, 406, 569. Four home runs, two stolen bases. He's hitting up top of that Mariners lineup. I know Gene Sakura hasn't been playing recently. He's due to come back, though, any day now. If he didn't come back today, I'm not sure. I didn't get to watch that Mariners game, obviously. But either way, we're seeing a guy that is just been awesome, and there's really no other better way to put that. He is striking out an almost 30% clip right now, but he's walking 15% of the time at this moment as well, which is awesome to see. Obviously, the home runs are going to continue. He has a 24% home run to fly ball rate. He's hitting 41% fly balls right now. I would say that he's a 20-plus home run guy, though, and probably close to a double-digit steal guy as well. I guess the better question to ask, Matt, is if you're looking at Dynasty Keeper Leagues right now, would you take Mitch Haniger or Tyler O'Neill, the other Mariner?
Haniger.
I agree. Bradley Zimmer or him?
Haniger.
I agree. How about Shin-Soo Choo?
Haniger.
I go Haniger as well. How about, I know that was kind of off the beaten path, but I'm just looking at.
No, you're fine.
I'm looking at another site's rankings based on their outfielders, and I'm trying to kind of get a grasp here. Dexter Fowler or Mitch Haniger?
Haniger. I think Haniger's got just as much stolen base upside. I think Fowler's stolen base upside is a little bit overblown.
I agree. I'm going to go Haniger as well just because he's younger. But I will say it's very risky taking Haniger when you know what you're getting out of Fowler. Haniger's 26, and I understand he made some mechanical changes and such, and obviously the Seattle Mariners really wanted him in the Taiwan Walker deal, and they made it a point to get him. So obviously they liked what they saw, but Dexter Fowler is at least an established commodity that I can rely on. So I understand if you're risk averse not wanting to do that. Let's keep on going here. I'm trying to go a little bit higher to stretch ourselves. Hunter Renfro.
Still Haniger for me.
We will talk about Renfro a couple weeks from now when we do the NL side. I'm going to go Haniger as well based on the fact that he steals some bases. Cole Calhoun.
Oh, I'm not a Calhoun guy, so I'm going Haniger.
I'm not a big Calhoun guy either. If I'm going to take him over Fowler, then I would take him over Calhoun as well.
Agreed.
But again, same mindset. If you are risk averse, then I would stay with the risk averse approach, which would be Cole Calhoun. How about the guy that I hate, Corey Ray?
Oh, Haniger for me.
Yeah, Haniger as well. I don't hate Corey Ray. I keep on saying that, and people actually believe
it's me. It's a running joke now. Yeah.
I'll give you four more guys. So we got Max Kepler.
Haniger.
I'm gonna go Haniger too. This is, I'll tell you what.
Same,
it is
right? We didn't talk about this. We didn't talk about this pre-podcast. So it's fun to see where we both are sitting on this.
Our love child, Ronald Acuna.
Man, you know what?
Don't you dare say it. Don't you dare.
I'm going Haniger, man.
Oh, I hate you. I'm still taking Acuna for long-term upside.
Yeah.
But I understand taking Haniger because he is playing right now and he's doing great. Michael Brantley, I think we're both in lockstep there.
Yeah, Haniger.
Hunter Pence, I'm going Haniger.
Yeah. If I could get on, if I was guaranteed 150 games out of Pence, I might go Pence, but I'm not. So I'll go Haniger.
Well, the way that it's looking, and I'm using another place's dynasty ranks here, but it's looking like Haniger, at least going into next season right now, or this time forward right now in dynasty leagues, is a top 150 player. Would you think that that's about right?
Man, that's hard. I would say he's right on the line of that. So, yeah, I can't argue with it. He's give or take 10 or 10 spots or so from that. So, yeah.
I don't mind it, but I feel like we're teetering right on that line of just overreacting.
That's kind of where I'm at. Yeah, that's kind of why I hedged that. Well, I talked about Haniger with Justin on the Monday podcast with our guest Jason Consoli. I'm sorry if I butchered the first name.
Yeah, you're right. Yep.
And we talked about him. I don't know if you got a chance to listen to it or if you guys out there did. We talked about Haniger, and I mentioned him in the Baseball Prospectus annual. They wrote a piece on him about – it was in the Arizona Diamondback section, because when the piece was started, he was still a Diamondback. So the extra salt in the wound there, I guess. It was his philosophy in hitting and how he tries to hit a backspin line drive to the center of the field. That's his goal every time up. And then Eno Saris today, actually, I just randomly saw this. I retweeted it, so it's on my page. I'm not going to read it because it's a long quote, but it's Haniger's philosophy on hitting, and I couldn't be more in love with this kid. Because you always read, oh, you know how these guys are always in the best shape of their life in spring training, or you always read how guys made swing adjustments. Like, if you watch Haniger's swing from 2015, in the first half of 2015 to now, it doesn't even look like the same player.
Yeah, it's like a Piscotty type change.
Yeah, it's like a transformation.
Transformation.
That's a good comp there. And I think it's you hear a lot of guys in the swing, you hear all this talk about Jason Hayward's new swing. It's identical. The hands are just in a different spot and they come up. You know what I mean?
He still hits a ground ball on every single
ball. There's not much change there. When you look at Haniger, it's completely rebuilt. If you didn't know they were the same player, you wouldn't, because the minor league videos are grainy as hell, and he's got different jersey numbers on, different organizations. Like, if you had no idea, you wouldn't know it was the same guy. He has that big leg kick now. It's very similar to Donaldson with the leg kick and the leverage. He's not Josh Donaldson at the plate, obviously, but he did get instruction from Donaldson's personal hitting coach as well. I forget the name. I think it's Tewksbury, I think is his name. Don't quote me on that. But it's refreshing to see these actual, I'm changing my swing, but he actually did. And it's nice to see that, and you can quantify it, and you listen. I've read articles and stuff about him, and that Josh Donaldson piece on OB Network about hitting is essentially the philosophy Haniger has, and it's great. I love it. New school versus old school, and I think that's kind of why Haniger has a bad stigma, because he got traded twice. But I think that's kind of why, because his philosophy on hitting is different. It clashes with old school people.
It does, yeah.
And I think if organizations might be a little bit behind in the adaptation of it, and they kind of don't want anything to do with it because it's different, but it doesn't mean it's wrong. And right now, I know it's a small sample, but last year he did OPS 999 in the minor leagues across two levels. So that's impressive as hell. And he seems to be carrying that over to the major leagues so far. I know it's only been 60 at-bats, but you cannot have any complaints about what we've been seeing. It's been great.
He was on every single sleeper tier I had on all my draft boards.
Yeah.
So I'm not
going
to sit here.
I still think he went too low.
I agree. And I'm not going to sit here and lie and say that I thought he would start off like this, because I didn't think it was going to be like this. And
Thought he'd be good. We thought he'd be an above-average play.
Yes. I did think he would be a 15-ish home run guy with about 10 steals. Now he's on a higher pace than that, obviously. But at the end of the day, I think that I thought he was a quality player coming into this year. And I think whenever it's all said and done, we could be seeing a guy that could be a top 150 player. I can't feel comfortable 100% with that quite yet, but I don't mind somebody that took him there, say you were doing a draft right now. So I don't agree with buying high on him in Keeper Dynasty, because there's literally no higher price that you would pay for him than right this second. Yeah. So if somebody ended up getting him in your league, then you kind of have to just applaud them for right now and let it be, because there's just no reason to buy high. You would have to pay a substantial price right now.
Yeah,
and I think it would be a top 150 player at least.
Yeah, you can't go buy him now. And a lot of things Haniger has going against him too is he reached AA in 2014. He has a large injury history as well, so keep that in mind. He reached AA in 2015, but he got sent down to high A, not because he was struggling in AA, but because the Diamondbacks had a logjam of outfielders and he wasn't going to get every day at bats. But if you don't know that, you're just he's in AA in 2015 at you know, or he was in high A in 2015 as a 24-year-old. Like, you think, oh, crap, that's kind of shitty. But if you don't know the story behind that, that's why, because they wanted him to get regular at-bats. It wasn't because he was, you know what I mean? It wasn't because he stunk. Yeah. So there's more to it than that. He's a guy that he. It's very easy to see why he slipped under the cracks.
It shows that not every path to the majors is linear. Sometimes it's jagged and it's a little bit messy. But
and teams make mistakes, a lot of mistakes, and so do we. And agreed. You know.
All in all, very, very quality player. I mean, best of luck to you for the rest of the year if you ended up getting him, and hopefully it ends up working out the way it's worked out for me in multiple spots.
I have him and Eric Thames on my big money league. Took a shot on both. That's looking very nice.
Now let's transition to a guy that's over 3 years younger than Mitch Haniger.
Right?
That's Mr. Nomar Mazara, and arguably even a hotter start than Haniger to this point. Mind you, it's about the same home runs. Again, I'm looking at stats going into today. That's a 328, 371, 586 line, four bombs, and 58 at-bats, the same amount of at-bats there. Only one stolen base, the first stolen base of Nomar Mazara's career. Congrats to him. Never been a steals guy, not somebody that we're expecting to be a steals guy at any point, but we've seen his hard contact spike. We've seen his plate approach spike. We have seen everything across the board get much better than we thought it could. I'm not going to sit here and say that he's a finished product right now and this is just going to be the way he is moving forward. I think we all expected this to be the outcome a couple of years from now, but it looks to me like he's learning very, very quickly on the job. And, well, I guess the only thing I can say here is if you're in a Keeper Dynasty League, especially take me for example, 20-team Friends with Fantasy Benefits Dynasty League, you know, what, 40 roster spots? I had Nomar Mazara before last season started, and I have him now still. I have no plans on trading him. I have no plans on if somebody gives me an offer to let him go for anything less than a top 100 player, and it probably would have to be a top, probably even higher, probably like a top 80 player, to be honest with you. So, you know, my question to you is, how high do you have him valued? And you can kind of throw the stats from right now out the window. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's doing well in the StatCast stuff as well. The exit velocity's solid. The barrels is a little bit less than Mitch Haniger's, but he's still putting up those. Right now, his average exit velocity is 92 miles an hour, which is in the top tier of baseball. So the StatCast metrics are backing up what he's doing. His actual on-field performance is obviously great. What he's doing in terms of the underlying metrics in strikeout rate and walk rate, those are great as well. The walk rate has always been a little bit of a concern for him, but overall, the plate skills have always been solid. I mean, there's not much to gain from just the small sample here, but in general, like, has your thought changed on what his upside is based on this small sample?
I'm not quite as high on Mazara as you, and I don't think it has, though. I mean, one thing that's kind of encouraging, but it also can kind of lead to bad things in the future, is Texas seems committed to playing him every day, even against lefties. And he's not hitting against lefties. We're talking like 14 at-bats.
Which is the opposite of Haniger. Haniger has been great against righties, and that also came in 80 at-bats last year against righties. He had a 250 average and four bombs in 80 at-bats. I already say that. This year, against righties in 50 at-bats, essentially, he has three bombs and a 313 batting average. But it's kind of opposite against lefties thus far for Haniger. With Mazara, if you look at his platoon splits, last year he only hit 234 against lefties. Right now he's hitting 167 and, you know, a dozen at-bats. But it definitely looks like he could be a platoon option.
Yep, and that kind of limits the ceiling. And another thing, too, is he's never going to be a stolen base guy, so that, again, limits the ceiling. But I do think he's shown growth with the power. Obviously, the power has increased from last year just because of how hard he's hitting the ball. I want to say hard hit rate stabilizes fairly quickly. I want to say it's about 100 or so at bats, right? And then, he's at 62 now, so he's still got quite a bit. But I mean, the StatCast data with exit velocity is way up from Mazara. I think despite not getting, because eventually I think he's going to get platooned because Texas has a lot of guys there that need at bats. A lot of, but on the other side of that, a lot of those guys get hurt. So, but I do think Mazara is going to get a lot of the at-bats against lefties, which is going to drive down the batting average, but it's going to raise the run scored a little bit and the counting stats up a little bit. He doesn't walk a ton. Actually, he's really bad walk rate. It's kind of propped up by the batting average right now, but I guess the ceiling on Mazara is always going to be capped for me a little bit with the lack of walk rate, the lack of speed, and the platoon issues. But he's a 21-year-old that's producing above-average level at the Major League Baseball, it's a Major League level last year as a 20-year-old, and as a 21-year-old now he's doing it. So, and it's his birthday in about a week and a half. So happy birthday, Nomar. But
I think that's part of the value with him, though, right?
Like, yeah, he's so young. Yeah, he's a guy in 10 years he could easily be in your outfield still in your fantasy team. He'll only be 31.
Yeah. I think that while the stolen – we always as fantasy owners want to grab the guys that give us value across the board. And with somebody like Mazzara, I don't think he's necessarily going to be the best power hitter that we see in the next 5 years. You know, I don't think he's going to be like a 40 home run guy, but I do think 30 home runs, 100 RBIs, 80-90 runs scored with in, you know, what, 450, 500 at bats. That's completely feasible.
I was gonna say, while still getting a platoon, you could hit 30 home runs. Yeah, that's nice. And he's only, like I said, he's only 21 right now.
Yeah. So, I think he's a top 80 player in dynasty right now.
Agreed, because you can literally set him and forget it for a fucking decade.
Some people probably think I'm high just saying that, but I think that top 80 is a good number. If you wanted to go higher than I understand it, the place that I'm looking at right now has him in the top 40, but I think that he's more of a top 80 guy just based on the fact that he doesn't steal. Overall, there's not anything bad to say, but I do just want to give updates on some of these players because some people get really, really hyped up on certain guys. Some people are a little bit down on them. Obviously, Mazzara and Haniger are off to two of the hottest starts in the league. There's not a lot to glean from that other than, yeah, they're doing great. You know, what do you do with them? You keep them and you see what happens. But long term, I think Mazzara ends up being a top 80 player based on age and based on his upside alone. But we might see the upside not be as high as Haniger's, but it might stay the same for a longer period of time than Haniger, who might give you half the amount of years with that production.
I think we're going to be our interests are going to be the same here. But for the next 3 years, you take Haniger over Mazzara, right?
I don't know.
Only three. Cap it at 3 years. I think I go Haniger for the next three.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. If what Haniger's doing right now sticks.
Long term and forever, though, it's Mazzara, and it's not close because Mazzara is 5 years younger.
Yeah, I agree. I do have this worry. Same worry I have with Piscotty, that things might come back to earth a little bit.
Kind of level off. Yeah.
But also, I was the same way with JD Martinez, and that didn't level off. So when people make mechanical changes, sometimes they work out and they keep on going with those mechanical changes long term. But some people fall back into those old habits and it ends up reversing the gains that they made. So that's something to kind of look out for with somebody like Haniger. But I've been wrong in the past. Like JD Martinez, I was 100% wrong on when he made his mechanical changes coming from Houston to Detroit.
I think everybody was. He didn't show any signs of life his last 2 years in Houston and he kind of took off.
Yeah, but I'm talking even post his first couple years in Detroit. Okay. I kept on saying, no, this is not going to work out. So with Haniger, I do worry about that in the back of my mind, but I also want to look at what I'm seeing and say and take it, you know, to heart a little bit and not just completely dismiss it.
Agreed. Yeah, I think you nailed it.
Let's talk about Aaron Judge. Hit another bomb tonight. I think I posted on Twitter a certain stat on that, so I'll definitely look it up while I'm going here. But what's your thoughts on Aaron Judge? Has your stock on him increased since this season has started?
Okay.
Absolutely, yeah. He's done the only thing. I don't think any of us, question the power output. I don't think that was ever a doubt. But he's managed to cut the strikeout rate to 30%, which 28% after tonight, which is still insanely high. But when you look at what he did last year, it's such an improvement. And he's making strides in that department. He's actually learning quite a bit from Matt Holliday. I've been reading a lot of things about that. Him and Matt Holliday are in batting practice partners together and in the same same BP group. And they have a contest of who can hit the ball farther. And Judge, I think, finally got Holliday. This Holliday hit a 450-foot home run the other day, but I think Judge's tonight was even farther than that. It was a missile.
It was 428, and I think the exit velocity was something like 112 or something ridiculous.
Oh, 112? Okay, yeah.
It's something ridiculous, yeah.
He's basically Giancarlo Stanton light, right?
Kind of, yeah, I would say. Yeah. Well, not even kind of. I would say that's pretty close.
Except he's not nearly as handsome.
No, he's not. He's not. He's just as tall. Yeah, Judge right now is in the top 10 in average exit velocity. He's only a few behind Stanton in that category, actually. And then in barrels, when you look at the barrel stat, he's also up there. He's actually tied with Matt Davidson, go figure, and Miguel Sano, and Avisail Garcia. So something's going on with the White Sox, a couple of the White Sox players. But yeah, he's also in the top 15 in barrels.
Just for those that don't know at home, where are you pulling this barrel stat from? Because it is interesting, and I want everyone to go look at it. I think I know the answer, but I
check out all my StatCast stuff on Baseball Savant. It's the MLB.com. StatCast site. It's something that they own, and that, you know, you can always look up all these leaderboards and search through all these different things. They give you really cool graphs that you can look up, which is really cool. You can check out different pitches that people are hitting, different spots in the strike zone, just all types of, honestly, you can spend probably 3 or 4 hours on there. I have spent an extensive amount of time on there, and I'm not really good at translating what I see into words. A lot of times I'm a lot more, I'm just weird like that. So it's kind of hard for me to translate. So the easiest way for me to translate success is by the barrel stat and by, you know, average exit velocity. I think that's the easiest thing for me to just give to listeners in terms of success, because usually that ends up being something that people get good results on.
Yeah. Hitting the ball hard is always good.
Yeah. That, hit ball good, not hit ball
yeah,
bad.
Yeah, yeah, and that's pretty much what Judge is doing. And the key is, I mean, I don't really care what the batting average is, because I don't think it's going to be ever really an asset. But all I care about is the power and the strikeout rate, and that's the key with Judge, and it'll be the key from Judge 10 years from now if you talk to me about him. It's going to be the same. So
yeah, small sample, the stat I wrote on Twitter. Since April 9th, when he hit his first home run, he's hitting .333. He has 5 bombs in that time with 10 runs scored and 11 RBIs over 9 games. And those are the type of spurts that I think you'll see from Judge. I'll say this, just watching him more than I saw the last couple of years, I am more and more impressed with him.
He has a plan. Yeah, I watched the Yankees hand it to the Cardinals for 3 games last week. And Judge didn't have a particularly great series, but last year, if you watched him, he was up there, and it was in his mindset, just don't strike out. That was his thought, but you could just tell.
Yeah.
And now it's, I'm waiting for this fucking pitch, and I'm going to get it, and I'm going to hit it 900 feet, and that's what he's doing. So.
Agreed. I watched him a lot this spring, and he looked really composed at the plate. I think he's been well coached, and to be honest, I think that the Yankees are, at least right now, they're doing a great job with some of these minor leaguers and developing them. I know Gary Sanchez was kind of a lost project for a while, but he came up and did great in his small sample last year. And Judge, I don't think they would have brought him up and started him in the majors this year if they didn't feel confident in him. And at least right now, they look right in doing that. So I give the Yankees farm system and their coaching and development team a lot of praise for just at least right now looking very, very, very smart in their decisions with Judge and Sanchez to this point. But we'll see. I mean, I think that Judge has the opportunity to be one of the high power leaders in this league if things break right with him in terms of the strikeout rate. But we've also seen with strikeout rates that it doesn't kill you in fantasy as long as you can walk. And he's been somebody that has shown the ability to walk. Yep. He's turned me around. I think that he is maturing at a lot faster pace than I thought he would. So I'm definitely buying Judge, but he's also another guy that joins Haniger and Mazzara here that have started off very, very hot.
Here's a question for you. This has changed for me in the last 2 months or so. Not much should change, but I think this did for me. Hunter Renfroe or Aaron Judge?
Aaron Judge, and I had Renfroe before.
Me too, yep. And I think they're essentially flipped. And I think that's, I mean, it's not a subtle difference for me. It was about a difference of 10 spots.
It's not even a slight on Renfroe. It's just more I'm impressed by
exactly.
Judge.
Yeah, exactly. Judge has shown some growth. And while we're talking about the Yankees, I guess we did kind of miss one brief news nugget. Last time we talked, we kind of alluded to James Caprellian kind of maybe needing Tommy John. Well, it was official. He had Tommy John 2 days ago.
Yeah.
So that's a bummer. But we'll get into that at a later date. As far as his future value in Dynasty Keeper Leagues, I'm pretty much not holding him. I don't think you need to. So he's a guy that I'm not afraid to drop if the situation comes up.
I agree. So I wrote down a ton of names here, and I think that we're obviously going to be running long if we go through each and every one of them. So let's give – I'm talking like 30 seconds on each player.
Okay.
30 seconds. No, so Trey Mancini, do you believe what he's doing right now? Do you think that he is a good keeper fantasy asset or keeper dynasty asset, or are you kind of scoffing at his start?
I think he's the ultimate DFS play against lefties. Because he hits all of his homer against lefties. I think in the right situation, he's going to get more playing time, but it's not really going to come here. So I don't really believe it. I think the power output is a little bit too much.
I agree. I think that he is just playing because they don't really have many other options, to be honest with you.
Team with the least depth of anybody in the major leagues, probably Baltimore.
Gary Sanchez, are you worried about the fact that he got injured? He's always been somebody that's gotten nicked up a bit in the minor leagues, and it's, you know, obviously kind of moving into this season as well, do you have any concerns about Gary Sanchez long term?
Not really. I do think he was overvalued in every draft this year, but I still think he's a potential 20-22 home run bat for the next 5 years.
Would he be your first catcher taken in a dynasty draft?
Right now, no, I'd still take Posey.
I agree with you. Would he be your second?
Yes.
I agree. Move on to Tim Anderson. Concerned about the start?
No, I think he is what he is. He's proven that he doesn't walk, and I think that's kind of part of the reason I'm down on him a little bit. Got to like the contract extension that the White Sox gave him, so they believe in him. The stolen bases, obviously, you can't steal first base, and a 1.9% walk rate is not going to play. So I guess I'm a little concerned, but I mean, I think when the end of the year rounds out, he'll be about 260, 290 with 25 steals.
I agree. We knew that he wasn't going to be somebody that walked, and it's actually been
worse than it was last year so far.
It was. And also fairly concerning is the fact that he was pretty steady last year in terms of his output. Like, he always had a couple home runs, a couple steals, always did okay in the batting average department, and right now he's been completely tanked. But I don't think it's a reason to panic. I still consider him a top 20 shortstop at the position long term. How about you?
Yeah. If he stays there, one question. He's already got 3 errors this year in 12 games. And being in Chicago, I've seen the White Sox play a couple times. There's at least 1 or 2 other plays where he could have got an error, but they didn't give him one. So defensively, he's been shaky as well this year. So, and I always kind of back of my mind think he profiles better as a center fielder. But I think the White Sox are invested in him at shortstop, so I think he's going to stay there.
Yeah, I know he's committed a few errors, but I think that he's sound defensively.
Yeah, he's fundamentally sound. It's just, yeah, it's just not being as smooth with the hands. He's only played professional baseball for – so he's only played baseball since he was in college. He picked it up in college. How weird is that? Or his senior year in high school, he picked it up, didn't get any big D1 offers, and played JUCO and was a first-round pick out of junior college. So
also has a 190 BABIP thus far.
Yeah, that'll happen. It'll happen when you have 52 plate appearances.
Tyler Naquin, a guy that you and I both like. I wouldn't say we love him or go as far as to say we love him, but is this kind of the end of the possibility of him being a full-time player if there was a possibility of that in the first place?
No, I don't think it is. I think when he moves on to his next organization, I think he'll be a full-time player. I think Cleveland's in a window right now where they can't let him develop at the major league level. So I still like him as a starter.
Yeah, I still like him too. I'm okay with buying low on him. I understand that the contact is a problem, but at least against righties, he can be formidable. So
yep. Buy low with no plans for anything this year.
Yeah, he hit over 300 against righties last year, 14 bombs and 290 at-bats. There's nothing wrong with that. But again,
and he's always been a high BABIP guy, not a 411 high BABIP guy, but he's always been 411 for a high BABIP. He's always going to hover around 380, 400. So.
Agreed. I think that there's more of a deep league guy, AL-only keeper dynasty leagues, but I think that the fact that he's only 26, there's still a lot of room to grow there. How about, let's move on to Jacoby Jones, somebody that has really started started to struggle lately. I believe that he struck out in what I think it's like 13 of his last 16 at bats, like really, really bad. Were you ever really a fan, or are you just?
Yeah, Justin and I totted him up a little bit in a couple of preseason episodes, definitely in the Detroit prospect pod, and then we kind of targeted him as a sleeper this year because we figured he would get at bats, and with the caveat that he's going to strike out, I didn't know if it would quite be over 30% like it is now. He has a little bit of position versatility. He can kind of play over the diamond. He's not being used like that because Detroit – I take back what I said about Baltimore. Detroit has the worst depth of any team.
Yeah.
Or
the Angels.
Yeah, either one. I guess any of those three. But Angels have Trout, which covers a lot of depth problems. But, I'm in for Jones for AL only this year. I don't think he's going to be much of a mixed league asset just because the batting average isn't going to be high. He does walk a decent amount, and this year he's showing that as well. I'll miss some time last year with a suspension. He's kind of the Alex Reyes kind of suspension where he missed first half of the year at AAA because he smoked weed in the offseason. What about you? I didn't hear what you said about Jones.
I've never been a fan of Jones. That's not to say that there isn't any fantasy impact he can make in the next couple of years, but
you know, he had a home run and a stolen base to start the season, literally the first game of the year, and ever since it's been terrible. So, yeah. And I'm not trying to say that that's the player he is, but I think that he needed more seasoning in the minors, and the Tigers just didn't have the opportunity to give that to him. They're kind of letting him learn on the job, and it's not something that is consistent with a good fantasy player, at least right now. It's going
to
take
He's
some time.
He's got the upside. He's got the upside to be a 15-15 guy.
I agree. I agree with that. I just don't. I've never been a fan in terms of the play skills and all that stuff. I've never really been a fan. So Raul Mondesi looks I know you've always been pretty down on him, but
yeah,
it's looked just as bad as you might've thought. I understand he has a couple stolen bases. Let me look up. He has 5 stolen bases thus far and 35 at bats. And let's see, I'm off to Kansas City's running so far. They are once again, top 10 in the league. They're running just about the same amount that they were last year. I think that he can still be useful for stolen bases, but obviously the plate skills are not good.
No, and I think this is exactly as we predicted it would go.
Do you think that he's going to lose playing time altogether, like get sent down or get released?
Yeah.
Or
Whit Merrifield is up already now.
I know Whit Merrifield is up, but do you think that he is going to completely lose the job altogether, like not even be on the team?
No, because I think he's already their starting shortstop for 2018. Just because Escobar's a free agent, and they're kind of grooming him for that role. But this dude has probably been brought along in the minor leagues as bad as any prospect I can think of off the top of my head right now. They, for some reason, have pushed him so high every level, and he has not hit anywhere. His career slash line in the minor leagues is .249, .297, .378. Yes, I understand that he's a slick glove, but I think there's no reason for him to be in the major leagues right now.
I think from a fantasy perspective that there's a ton of upside, so I'm willing to kind of keep him as a bench guy because of the fact that his speed is so great, and that's something that you can always use in fantasy, but at least for right now, he's certainly a bench guy. In terms of adding him from another team, maybe as a throw-in. That's all I would kind of look for.
Billy Hamilton runs circles around Mondesi with the bat.
That's probably true. Greg Bird, obviously somebody that I'm very high on. He is starting off with a .120 batting average this year, which is certainly proving me right. But I still love Bird. I think that he is worth a buy if you can get him for a cheaper cost. This isn't going to be what happens the rest of the year. I know that he got dinged up for a little bit, and that's certainly been something to worry about with him. But I think that he has 25-30 home runs in the bat. Long-term, I think that he can be a top 10 first baseman long-term as well. I'm willing to buy him. I know that you probably share a different sentiment.
Yeah, I don't think he's 25 home bat at all. I think he's a 20-ish guy. I don't think the swing. I know he's in Yankee Stadium, so he might top that a couple times just because of the short porch there. But his swing is geared more toward line drives. I comped him on our Monday show to a Matt Adams playing in the big city.
Yeah, that's disgusting.
If Matt Adams played in New York, he would and was coming up. That's the kind of hype he would get. And Matt Adams is build up as a 25 home run bat when he's not either. He's kind of a line drive. Gap to gap batting average guy too, and I think Bird is more that guy, but Bird's average potential isn't as high as Adams is either. He walks better. He obviously has a better walk rate, but I think 260 with 20 home runs is about what you're going to get. It's kind of Mitch Moreland-y for me.
Mitch Moreland's been great this year.
He's been
awesome. Yeah, I'm not really looking at what he's done this year thus far. I think that Greg Bird is my faith in Bird is for something that obviously he's never done yet. And I know that that might seem like a stupid, ambitious way to look at things, but I think that that's just my belief. I've watched Bird multiple years now. I believe in his swing. I believe in his approach. I think that he's going to be a strong player.
It's a good buy low candidate if you're someone like you that believes in him because the strikeout rate is so high. But I mean, what do you expect? He missed the whole season last year, which is kind of weird to me that the Yankees guaranteed him the everyday job at first base, even knowing he missed the whole previous season.
But no, what's funny too is that obviously they have Carter there to face lefties, but
yeah.
Joe Girardi continues to say that when Craig Bird's healthy, he wants him to be the full-time first baseman. Obviously, that means that they would DH Carter, but I just don't think that they wanted Carter. I think that they ended up having to sign Carter to make sure that Bird, some if he ever got hurt, just have some insurance.
They have absolutely nobody in AAA at first base. It's kind of like a wasteland for them.
I think
their AAA first baseman is like 4 years older than Bird.
Yeah, it's weird.
And he's not a prospect either. But I think with it was just weird to me that they gifted him that job, knowing he missed the whole year. And I know he was exceptional in 2015 when he came up for that 45-ish game sample, but he hasn't proven to be that type of hitter in any level in the minors previous to that, except for short stints in AA in 2014. But, I mean, he had a good fall league the year before. The fall league this year wasn't good, but, I mean, that's coming off injury again. I expect him to settle in as a player with strikeout rate probably in the 27 to 28% range with .260 average. I think that's what you're looking at for Bird, which in this era in deep leagues like 20 team leagues, I think that's a nice guy to have at your corner spot. But I'm not nearly as high on him as you are. But I'm not here to criticize you because I can see why you're high on him. I get why people think there's potential there, but I think the odds are stacked against him reaching that potential, so I'm going to go with somebody else.
The durability is certainly – that's the biggest problem for me, is the fact that he just hasn't been durable. If he is durable, then I think that would give us the opportunity to see him over a stretch of time, a big stretch of time, in which we can really analyze what his true outcomes might be. Because at least the last couple of years, other than a very brief September, which is not what I'm hanging my hat on here – we haven't seen him have a full year of durability, not even like 6 months of durability. We've seen him in very, very short spurts, and really nobody can get in a rhythm doing anything if you just have short spurts.
And I want to build on that too. I want to build on that too, because if you look at his minor league production split down to games played per level, he's only in 2013 was the only season where he stayed at one level and he got consistent at bats. He played 130 games in A ball in Florida State League, which is a tough place to hit. 288, 428, 511 line.
Yeah.
And every other year he's been either injured where he misses, you know, only plays 70, 80 games, or he's 75 games here, 27 games here, getting called up, 49 games. You know, it's – I know that's like – so that's one thing in your favor is this durability and also stability.
Hasn't had either one. And I think that's the bigger argument. Not the skill set for me, but I think it's more the – consistency, being reliable, being able to stay on the field, all of those arguments I think are bigger for the sell side of Greg Bird than I think that he's a mediocre player. Because overall, if you've watched him play, I don't think that he's somebody that looks like he'd be an average player.
Yeah.
But I mean, we've seen this with Steven Matz on the pitching side. If somebody just consistently is inconsistent or not durable, then usually that leaks into the major leagues. And we've already seen that with Greg Bird. And there's always so long that we can really continue to be okay with this until we're finally like, you know what, I'm kind of done with it and wash your hands with it. I will say with Greg Bird that if you are the person that is sitting there with him and you're just tired of carrying him on your roster, you've had him for 3 years now, and you're just like, when can I get rid of this guy? If he has a solid month, not as good as the September in 2015, but a solid month in terms of like 4 or 5 home runs, hitting 300 or whatever, and you feel like that's an opportunity for you to sell him off and you can finally get rid of him, then I don't mind you doing that if you don't believe in his long-term prognosis or whatever. But I do think that he's going to be somebody that if he can at least get a decent stretch of consistency under his belt and play in a consistent amount of games, he might be able to lend some really nice fantasy impact to you, and I firmly believe that.
I think you nailed it, and I think he's going to be the ultimate guy that's going to test fantasy owners' patience.
So. I agree. So. He's already tested my patience. Trust me.
Yeah, he's going to be the guy in your keeper dynasty league that's been on like 8 different teams.
Yeah.
And then finally does well. You know.
I'm in a 12 team keeper league, and he's been dropped and picked up probably 4 or 5 times.
There you
go. Twice by me.
See, there you go.
Ryan Healy, somebody that's hit a couple home runs and has shown spurts. Obviously, last year he was great in 2016 in his limited exposure, but this year he's shown spurts of the guy we saw last year. 56% fly ball rate, which is very encouraging, but he's just striking out a ton. I mean, right now he's at 69% strikeout rate. When you look at his game log, you have a couple of 0-for-4 with 3 strikeouts, 0-for-3 with 2 strikeouts, 0-for-4 with 2 strikeouts. That is a problem for me. Like, if guys can't make adjustments in the middle of the game,
I definitely get a little bit worried about that. I don't mind if you strike out, but when I look through your game logs and they are 3-4 strikeout events, that's a problem for me. Not saying I'm completely off of Healy, but I think people were really, really high on him. Not high in the sense that it was irrational, but he was still a top 200 player. I wasn't willing to take that price. I was definitely more on board the Nick Castellanos / Mike Moustakas run that was a little bit later. But yeah,
with Healy, I think that he's still somebody that's just unproven to me, and I'm not really on board with him quite yet. I don't know how you feel.
I think you nailed it, and I think I'm going to speculate a little bit here. Keep this in mind. I'm basing this off nothing. It's just my own personal thoughts. Why are the A's DHing him unless he's hurt by
that's some sort? That's a very good point. That's a
because
possibility.
He's well, only
they have Trevor Plouffe too.
He's exactly, and Trevor Plouffe was so bad at third base, the Twins put him in right field.
They could be trying to showcase Plouffe a little bit more. Maybe that he can still play third base, and they can trade him off.
They're moving him to first base and sporadically playing him at third and DHing him most of the time. I'm just kind of curious. Maybe there's some sort of arm injury that we don't know about.
There could be. That's definitely a possibility. Regardless,
I'm kind of cool on Healy though. I'm with you. Not to be boring, but I'm right there with you. Not a guy. Well, I was a team guy. I didn't see the upside.
People that did like him going into the season because I wasn't hating on anybody. Saying like, oh wow, this Ryan Healy loves ridiculous because I didn't think it was ridiculous. But I just wasn't that type of guy. So I'm not sitting here saying that I think that he is not a viable option for the years to come, but definitely I do like Matt Chapman. I know that he's injured right now. We're not seeing anything from him in the minor leagues, but I think that Healy, if things were to play right, could be their first baseman of the future. I just need to see it. I need to see a longer stretch of him doing things well in the majors. It's already a disadvantage being in that park, and I understand K-Riss Davis kind of defies all odds with his power outbursts in that park, but I still need to see it from somebody like Healy, who is just, even though he hit 13 home runs and has almost or a little bit over 300 at bats in the majors, I'm not fully in on yet. So
I'm trying to figure out what the ultimate upside is for Healy, because honestly, it's a mystery for me. Kind of came out of nowhere last year.
Maybe Plouffe-ish. I mean, Plouffe's on the same team. I know it's an easy comp. Maybe, but like Plouffe-ish, 20 plus home runs, maybe a 270 average. At
yeah, peak, I'm with you there. Okay, I'm with you. So kind of like a Nick Castellanos before this season.
Yeah, something like that ish.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Can be viable in deeper formats. If you're in a very shallow keeper dynasty, then he's not a guy that you hold a roster spot for, that you wait for, you know? Oh,
yeah, and the thing with me here is, too, is I don't know if he has enough bat to be a first baseman, but I guess Oakland's got Alonso over there, so that kind of throws
out. They don't care about that. They don't care about
it. But, like, the thing with me is I kind of keep coming back to that. Maybe he's kind of hurt that we don't know about, because you kept reading things last year, at least how he was much, much improved at third base and kind of turned into, like, an option there. I know Matt Chapman is an absolute stud at third base, so maybe they're moving him around
defensively. Yeah, to be clear, yeah, he still has a lot of strikeout problems.
This is very true. I was talking about from the defensive side. Matt Chapman's also looked at as a stud at third base, so maybe they're being proactive in moving him around for Chapman's arrival, because Chapman, if he's not playing third base, loses majority of his value. So maybe they're getting proactive about that, or maybe Healy just is terrible at third base. I mean, one of the five Oakland A's fans, please tweet me and see if you have an explanation for this, because I can't figure out why he's not playing defense more.
I think that's a great point. So we'll definitely stay tuned for that, because if we see Healy's on the Roto World or whatever news feed saying that he has an injury,
elbow injury or something. Yeah, I don't know.
I think that's certainly understandable based on what we've seen usage wise to date. Malik Smith, we have two guys left. I know it's been a long show, everybody, but Malik Smith, just watching him as a Rays fan, he was an absolute game changer before he obviously got injured with the hamstring problem. And he was, like I said, just an absolute game changer on the field. He was able to steal some bags. I think the Rays were willing to let him run at will whenever he was on base. Now, long term, we're definitely worried about the plate skills, but at least from a stolen base perspective, I think that he's a 40-plus stolen base guy, and that can be certainly viable in dynasty keeper leagues. Are you on board with that?
I am. I'm very much on board with that. I mean, I know it's a small sample this year, and he had a hamstring injury, so I don't know how much this even played into that.
I think it was sudden. I don't think that he was hampered by it before.
So 8 games and 3 steals. I mean, you can't argue with that. That's productive. 360 OBP with 273 average, 12% walk rate. Yeah, that seems high, but guess what? That's right in line with his minor league numbers. So I expect it to go down probably around the 9-10% range just because Major League pitching is better. But his minor league walk rate is consistently 11.6, 12.5, 11.9, 11.2. It's not abnormal to think that. So a guy with his speed that can walk is automatically dangerous. So,
I don't think he'll ever be a leadoff guy.
Because, no, he's a good nine guy, good nine hitter.
Yeah. So as long as he can't
hit lefties. No lefty. He's a slap hitter against righties, which is good because he should be. He's a mini Billy Hamilton for me with better on base skills.
Agreed. I think we're on lockstep there. Last guy, Joey Gallo. Has he impressed you during your time without Adrian Beltre on the field thus far? I will just give some StatCast stuff again. Joey Gallo is up there in terms of exit velocity. I want to get the exact number so I don't mess him up. He is 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 down. So 95.4 miles an hour is his average exit velocity. That is top seven, actually, tied with Miguel Cabrera in average exit velocity thus far. I'm trying to look for him in barrels. Yep, he is 29th. So top 30 in barrels and top eight in average exit velocity thus far. When you look at his actual line, he is still hitting an abysmal 178. Comes with a couple bombs.
One number I want to circle.
Which is weird.
There's one number I want to circle.
58% contact rate?
Well, okay, so two numbers. 58% and 36.5% strikeout rate.
Yeah, yeah.
That's it. If he can't improve that, and he hasn't, he's going to be destined to be riding buses for most of his baseball career.
He struck out multiple times in three of the last four games. He has two games to date where he hasn't struck out.
Yeah, and he's getting everyday time. He's getting everyday time.
He is, and he's faced some really, really – I know that the Rangers had some really tough lefties they had to face. I don't know if it was Keuchel or a few other guys, but they ended up playing him because they really had no other option. So,
yeah, and I think – I like how you said strikeouts are always going to be part of his game. Right now, it's half of his game.
Right now, it's all of his game, yeah.
And
well, if you look at his 108 at-bat sample in 2015, he had a – was it 47% contact rate, which is 53% strikeout rate? So at least if you look at it from that aspect, he's improved a little bit.
I think the best case scenario for Gallo, I feel Russell like we talk Brandon. About Gallo every other week. Yeah, is Russell Branyan-esque, where he is striking out 35 to 40% of the time, but he's hitting 35-plus bombs a year, and that's certainly a win. I think that's a win for you. In on-base percentage leagues, he's still fine. You know, 13% walk rate right now this year. I just think that it's going to come down to whether he can get it down just a little bit more. He's got to try a little bit harder to make some contact. But you also don't want it to take away from that great exit velocity, that great, you know, barrels stat that we're looking at here, which, again, takes into account launch angles. And that's the way that he kind of has his swing path. You don't want to really mess with his swing because, obviously, that's delivering massive amounts of home runs.
Yeah, and I've seen, he's going to have to make adjustments soon, though.
He will. I've seen both of his home runs, though, and both of them came in interesting spots. It wasn't like right down the middle. It was kind of high in the zone where he had to really kind of drive it and twist his hips extremely fast to get to it. And another one was like, I think, low and outside. I can't remember off the top of my head, but both of them were pretty impressive in terms of him being able to get to the ball. And there's also been some strikeouts in there because I've watched a lot of at-bats from Gallo this year.
Yeah.
There's also been some strikeouts in there where – he ended up having really good at-bats. You know, he ended up getting to 3-2. He fouled off a couple of them, and then he ended up just kind of looking at strike three, or he ended up just missing, or whatever it might be. But he's had some really good at-bats in there that I think can give you some hope. Mind you, I'm really, really praying for the hope here. So I'm not probably the right person to talk about with Gallo, but at the end of the day, I think that you can really get something special here in terms of the home run pop if it were to just get a little bit better in the strikeout rate. But this isn't any news to anybody. So let's maybe look at some players and make some decisions here for fantasy owners that need to make a decision once Adrian Beltre comes back. So from a Keeper Dynasty perspective, are you taking Gallo or Willie Calhoun?
Man, Calhoun, I think.
I'm taking Gallo still.
That's fair.
Are you taking Gallo or Carlos Gomez?
Carlos Gomez.
I agree. Are you taking Gallo or Yonervis Solarte?
How deep is my league?
Deep. We'll say Solarte. 15 teams are deeper.
Solarte.
I agree. How about Lourdes Gurriel, your boy?
See, that's hard. Gurriel really hasn't played much.
No, he hasn't.
I'll go Gurriel because he's going to have multi-position eligibility.
I'm going to go Gallo. How about
which is fair.
Tommy Joseph or Gallo?
Gallo.
I agree. How about the two that I mentioned earlier, Bradley Zimmer and Tyler O'Neill?
Both the outfield prospects.
I agree. A.J. Reed.
A.J. Reed.
Oh, man. I agree.
That's hard. A.J. Reed only because the direct path to playing time is better.
I agree, but it's close. I think that they're kind of in the same boat because they have somebody in front of them. Just it happens to be that Gallo has his guy injured right now in Beltre. But if Gurriel goes down, I think that Reed gets the fast track to Houston. Blake Rutherford.
Oh, Blake Rutherford.
Really?
Yeah.
I still go Gallo, but I
think Rutherford's a four category guy, I think. And I think Brandon at his best, or Brandon. Gallo, I think Gallo, I think Gallo at his best is a 3.5 category guy. So I'll take the four from Rutherford.
Well, all in all, we have a little bit of a mix and match here, but I think that he is a top 275 to 300 guy in Dynasty right now, which is a far cry from the top 150-ish guy he was probably a couple years
ago. Yeah, I think me and you were like two of the biggest Gallo guys around a couple years ago.
We
are.
Yeah, we were. I still am, but we were a couple years ago. We were even higher.
We kind of had a mini funeral for him today, but I mean, it's not as bleak as I want as I'm saying it. I mean, the one thing you always have to love is, and I think it contributes a lot to his problems, is he works counts. He's always finding himself in deep counts, and I think that plays into the fact that he strikes out so much because he's always looking at 3-2, 2-2.
Yeah.
But you got it's a game of adjustments, and if you don't make them, it's going to chew you up and spit you out pretty quickly. I think Gallo's going to be Gallo's going to be this guy that bounces around from minor league deal to minor league deal and ends up on seven different organizations before he's done. It'll be the Rays, the Brewers, the A's because the walk rate, and then he'll be an injury replacement when somebody gets hurt. When Rizzo or Bryant gets hurt 1 year, he'll go to the Cubs and be an injury replacement and play there, and then he'll sign a deal somewhere. He'll bounce around everywhere.
You're probably right. With that said, and also just ending on a terrible, sad note here with Gallo.
He's still a pretty good defensive player at third base, and he has an absolute cannon for an arm.
I agree.
Positive things.
I'm trying to keep it positive as well, but yeah. Let's wrap this thing up, tie a bow on it. Matt, where can you be reached? What are you working on nowadays?
MD Tomp FWFB. Listen to the main show with me and Justin and you, Mr. Mike. And
every once in a while, yep.
We always have a guest. We always have a nice and interesting guest. We're just watching baseball and soaking it up as much as I can. Work schedule is kicking my rear end right now. So minor league baseball is I'm making that my priority next week. I'm going to watch minor league games all week. Hit me up on there. I always kind of post random baseball stats and thoughts on Twitter if you haven't followed, but if you've noticed by now. And I also like to make fun of managers on the Cardinals. So hit me up.
Your random Cardinals musings are awesome on Twitter, I got to say. Trevor Story just literally fell over from a Kershaw curveball, so that was pretty awesome.
Yeah, Trevor Story, he's an interesting guy for our National League list.
He is. We'll talk about him for sure because he still hasn't accumulated over 500 at-bats, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, fits the criteria. And maybe Andy will be back next week.
Hopefully. We definitely missed Andy this week. I know he's a crazy cat, but he's our crazy cat, and we love him. You can reach him on Twitter, at Mike Werner, FWFB. Check me out on the Monday show. I'm going to be honest here, probably next month, to be honest. In May is probably when I will be able to make another appearance.
When your PD suspension's over.
Yep. It's when my suspension for the Monday show is over.
I want to apologize to everybody. You made you unknowingly took a PED, of course. You
wouldn't. It was that and a mix of not hustling.
You would never do it on purpose.
All Justin wants is for me to hustle and run it out to first base, and I can't do it. I refuse. If I hit a little dribbler to second base, I'm not running it out. I'm sorry. I'm walking.
No, fuck that. Just hit dingers.
Exactly. No bunt. Hashtag no bunt and hashtag no hustle.
Hashtag never bunt.
Is it never bunt? It probably is. I'm so tired at this point, I don't even know what day it is. Is it Wednesday? I don't even know.
And for another 30 minutes it is.
Reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner, FWFB. Check me out again on the Monday show when I can make it. Check us out on the Prospect Show every Thursday like you are now. Please rate and review the podcast. Really helps us out. Again, we are going to select a winner every month to kind of give out some Friends with Fantasy Benefits swag, so please do that. You can also check out my daily matchups column on baseballhq.com. Anything I write as well on Friends with Fantasy Benefits. .com. Please listen to all of our other shows each week as well. We do a lot of great things, so check it out. For Matt and myself, thank you for listening, and good luck in your keeper leagues. Every night.